accession number 21019, real one.
Jack Sinclair, real one. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Settle, South Yorkshire.
Which year was this?
That was in 1921.
Did both your mother and father come from Sheffield?
No, my father was from Liverpool originally, but he was a soldier, and he was stationed in Norwich. That's where he met his wife, and after they were married, they moved to Sheffield. And they lived in Sheffield then for the rest of their lives.
So what unit did he serve with?
He served with the Hussars in the pre-First World War, that was.
Did you go to school in Sheffield?
Yes.
Which school was that?
First of all, I went to Sale Memorial Church of England School, and at 12 I went to Carfield Intermediate School for 2 years.
So how old were you when you finished schooling?
I was 14 when I finished schooling.
So that would have been in 35?
Yes.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I worked for a laundry in Sheffield as a van boy to start with. And when I was 17, they allowed us to take our licence, and we then acted as van drivers. And I was there until I was called up for military service.
Had you joined TA before the war? Had you joined TA before the war?
No, I was a member of the local defence volunteer, the Home Guard, as we originally became known, for 12 months before signing up, but I wasn't in any territorial service.
What are your memories of serving with LDV?
Well, we did very well, actually. We had a headquarters at what we call Manor Castle in Sheffield, and we operated around that area, which had quite a lot of open country, and we did patrols, of course, during the Blitz, when in December of 40, and then in the early part of 41, we helped the police control the situation, roadblocks, if they were necessary to keep the crowds back from severely damaged areas and that type of thing. And we also did our training, military training. We did rifle training on Totley Rifle Range quite frequently, which would be weekends in that, of course, and did our military training in Manor Castle. So I quite enjoyed my time with the LDV and Home Guard, as it became known, and was eventually made sergeant of the platoon.
How necessary was it to control crowds in the Blitz?
Not really, but the police did like a little bit of help. There was never any danger. It was just the numbers who probably wanted to get to property that they owned or they worked in, such as the shops and the buildings that were damaged, and we had to just help the police. But there was never any what you would call danger, or no rowdyism at all.
Did you ever get people stealing from property?
We didn't. I didn't see it personally, no, and we never had records of it happening in any quantity. Whether it did happen, but not in our time, and not whilst we were on the streets. We didn't see any of that. No looting at all, no.
What was the Blitz like in Sheffield?
Quite severe on two occasions. We did quite a bit of damage, particularly down towards the works area, Attercliffe and other areas where a lot of the big steelworks were occupied. The city centre did suffer damage with some of the big shops. In fact, I remember Walsh was there. The directors were apparently congratulating themselves at 4 o'clock in the morning that they'd escaped, and the building was on fire without their knowing it. It simply burnt completely out because fire service couldn't deal with all the blazes that were going off, obviously. But there was quite a bit of damage in the centre with the bigger shops.
Were you present when Walsh's burnt down?
No. I was back up at the headquarters on that particular morning at Manor Castle.
Would How frightening was the Sheffield Blitz?
Well, I don't recollect a lot. We had a huge brick shelter in our yard. We couldn't put steel one, the Anderson shelter, in because they were all asphalt. There was no grass in the area where I lived. And during one of the blitzes, we were in there, and there was a fair amount of damage around, but I don't recollect there being a lot of panic, not at all. We did a fair amount of what we called fire watching, of course, with our own firm. We were on duty sort of once a week, where we would stay at the firm all night and act as fire watchers.
Did you get paid for that?
Yes, yes. Yes, we got extra pay for that. And of course, we were fed as well whilst we were there. We slept in the building and acted as fire watchers whenever required.
How did public morale stand up to the Blitz in Sheffield?
I thought very well. I don't recollect personally there have been in the immediate family or in the Home Guard when we went that there was any real panic at all. And there was no, I don't recollect it, that people were dismayed and they were obviously frightened with it being so devastating, the bombing. But I don't recollect panic in any shape or form.
Did you at that time think the Germans might win the war?
Oh yes, yes. I particularly in 40, just been working for a laundry, a lot of the people from Dunkirk came to the area, and we served them in their camps. We took their washing, took it back, and it struck me then that there was very little that those people could do had the Germans arrived, because there's no real equipment, and it seemed to me that had they arrived, there would have been real trouble.
Did you think there would be a German invasion?
I was surprised that there wasn't. Yes, I must say, because they got all the way to the coast in large numbers, unchallenged, really. It had been that once they'd moved in the Blitzkrieg, then the move was regular, and they finished up at the coast, and I'm a bit surprised they didn't come across. It was June, after all. It wasn't bad weather. And I'm a bit, yes, I am, quite honestly, especially with hindsight. Now I know a bit, but even then I thought they would come because of they were a conquering army, and they were a complete army.
Would you listen to wireless at that time?
Yes, I did listen quite regularly.
What to?
To the home channels, really, the BBC programmes.
What type of programmes would they be?
Well, mainly they would, quite a number of them would be to try and lighten the feelings among the people, comedy shows, and then of course different music while you work in the mornings for the factories and other things like that. But in the evenings there were mainly a bit of propaganda about how things were going, but mainly they were to keep the morale a little high by being rather light-hearted programmes.
Would you listen to any VIPs on the wireless?
I did. We often used to get them Saturdays. I seem to remember that Saturday lunchtime there was often one of the politicians would be on. And if I wasn't at work, we did work Saturday mornings in those days. If I wasn't at work, then I would listen to them, yes.
Which politicians would you listen to at that time?
Well, the main one would be Churchill himself, of course, came on. But it was first, before that, it was Mr. Chamberlain. I remember his speech on the 3rd of September when he announced it around about 11 o'clock. And then the Home Secretary, Morrison, would come on and have his chats. But as I say, they were often on the Saturday, as I remember. And I did work in the morning, so I didn't hear them all.
What effect would these speeches have on you?
Well, it was a rather curious situation because we were in Yorkshire, and apart from the bombing, which wasn't regular, we'd had two or three raids, we weren't really in the war in that sense. Because although we had lots of these troops around in the camps being refitted after Dunkirk, wouldn't consider that we were really a lot like possibly people on the south coast. It seemed a little bit away from us, so we didn't, to me, I mean, I was then only coming up for 18, and it didn't seem to me that there was a lot of worry around the place, and the speeches were just speeches that we expected to hear to cheer us up. They were all giving us the that they'd missed the bus and all the rest of it, and they didn't come over, and I think they were mainly aimed at trying to keep us a little cheerful. But from my point of view, I was quite happy. Although I'd expected them to come, they hadn't, and we did our night duties on the Home Guard without any problems. We didn't see anything that worried us. We'd just do our patrols and retire back to work the next day, and nothing really happened.
Was your period in LDV of much military value to you?
I think it was later on, yes. Yes, I think they had the skills. We had a drill, we had the rifle range, and we had a comradeship with the rest of the platoon. And yes, I think it did help, yes.
Do you remember any of the personalities who were in LDV with you?
Well, there was the two that were particularly of mine was a young lad, Ashton, and Dixon. They were my two great chums, and we did a lot of time together during the the duty, and also when we had time off, of course, in the evenings. We used to go playing snooker and that type of thing. And they were quite good friends of mine.
Can you tell me about joining up, please? Joining up in the Marines?
Well, that came about April 41. I'd had a couple of medical tests. The first one didn't seem to be too successful. And in April, I had to report to the Royal Marines at Eastney, Portsmouth. A couple of other chaps were on the train. I hadn't known them before. But we travelled down to Portsmouth together. And as we were all drivers in civilian life, we weren't going to the Royal Marine Barracks itself. We went to what we called the Hutment Camp. And that was the technical training centre for drivers and technicians, painters and VMs and all that type of thing. So we found our way there eventually and reported into the camp.
This is in Portsmouth?
Yes. And allocated our huts, of course, and that type of thing, and settled in quite successfully there. We had then 3 weeks training on the parade, where we had to go back into barracks for that, which was next door, and we had the Sergeant Platt was our instructor, and he would gallop us round for the 3 weeks that we were in there. Then we had a week small arms at the small arms range just off the Eastney, and after that we had to do 3 weeks driver training, which was at Fort Cumberland, which was a star establishment just on the by Langston Harbour. And we went reported there and did our 3 weeks driver training. So we had about seven weeks altogether in Portsmouth.
How did the people in charge of the training treat you?
Very well on the whole, very well. There was no bullying. We got chased around, but they didn't. There was no one sort of picking on you and making you do things that you didn't need to do. We had to do what we were told, obviously. But I didn't have any problems with that. Maybe because I'd already had a certain amount of it before with the LDV, but it didn't worry me. And as far as I could see, it didn't worry a lot of the lads. There were all different kinds that were there. I mean, the squad for people from all over the British Isles, and some of them were East Londoners, and in those days East Londoners were a crowd of their own. They had their own little rules, and they didn't always follow the normal plans, or they weren't always very keen on discipline.
What kind of rules did they have?
Well, they would try and avoid any of the duties that came up, and they would not always, when we were not particularly on the parade, because they were under an instructor there, but when we was in the government camp, say at meal times, in the evening meal you would always find potatoes at the end of the table, and those were to be peeled by the people that use that particular table, and they would try and dodge that type of thing. They'd have their own little ways of trying to do little things like that, get out of little things like that. But on the whole, we were a reasonably happy crowd of youngsters, and we were there just to do that particular thing, and driving was our forte, so we knew we weren't going to be very long on the parade as such. It was just that we got to get used to their Royal Marines way of drill and the Royal Marines way of moving around the barracks and under control and that type of thing. It's just slightly different to the army. One or two things are slightly different in the movement of the feet. They're not the same. The army pick their foot up and sort of stamp it in, whereas the Royal Marines slide it in from the side, that type of thing. But we knew that we weren't there very long, and I don't think anybody rebelled too much.
What type of vehicles were you driving?
We had 1,500-weight Bedfords, and then we had the larger Bedfords, 3-ton, and also some of the others. I remember an old Leyland we used to have, 3-ton Leyland, and we did have one dual control vehicle, but I'm not quite sure who needed that, because we were in the main were already drivers, but they did have this dual control vehicle. But the main, to start off with, we were on the 1,500-weight Bedfords.
Were there any problems in dealing with these vehicles?
Not that I remember, no. We were all new to the area, of course, so we were quite happy wandering around, driving around the New Forest or driving around the other parts of the countryside, Winchester and other places that we hadn't seen before. But I don't recollect we had much bother mechanically, not with them. I do remember that on one occasion we had a lecture by the lieutenant, and he was going to give us the Otto cycle, the four-stroke cycle of the petrol engine. He got to describing the third stroke, and the orderly came in and said he was wanted on the phone. And that was the end of the lecture, and we never did find out from him what the fourth stroke was. So, but no, we didn't have mechanical trouble at all. We was out every day with a corporal instructor, and he would about 4 or 5 to a vehicle, and he would just put him behind the wheel as he required, and off we would go.
What was the next step for you?
Once we'd finished the course, we were then posted. And my first posting was the MMBDO 2, which was a mobile naval base unit. And that was to Hayling Island. And I joined the transport company, which was part of the landing and maintenance unit. And our job was to convey goods to any part of the MMBDO, which was stretched right along the south coast. We had anti-aircraft batteries, light and heavy. We had coastal artillery batteries, and they stretched pretty much down into Devon. And we also had a unit up at Alton, which we had to go and visit. So our job mainly was carrying goods or people around the south coast, which again, not many of us had been this way. So it was an adventure, really, that we was able to find our way around, because no no signposts, obviously, in the wartime. It was a question of go off the island, turn left and keep going. But I do remember well, I took some young officers down to a coastal battery, or a coastal light force, the ships, small ships, and we went to West Bay, which was my first visit to West Bay, and that was quite a surprise to suddenly turn a corner, and there was the harbour. And I was quite pleased with that little visit. And on the way back, one of the officers said, oh, we have a mess due tonight. We've got to be back by so-and-so. So it was a bit of foot down and come back in time for them to attend their mess due.
What kind of armour was that?
Mainly coastal artillery, 4-inch and 6-inch we had along that coast. And there was also a bit more inland. We had the 3.7 anti-aircraft and the light Bofors anti-aircraft units. That was 3rd Heavy Attack Regiment.
And the letters MNBDO, can you tell me what they stand
yes,
for?
That's Mobile Naval Base Defence Organisation. And we were the 2nd. There had been one previous to that, but they were off in the Middle East at that time. But we were the 2nd of that unit. And the idea being that when we took the army took places, if the port was damaged, that we were able to rectify it sufficiently for the Navy to use it and also to defend it.
What are your next experience memories from this time?
Well, I met for the first time my section sergeant was Jimmy Twigger, and he looked after us, chased us around, but he was a very good NCO, or senior NCO as he was, and I remember he organised a sports day on the 2nd year that we was over the island, and he picked the teams out, and he must have had a fairly good eye because he picked what appeared to be a very good team from the boys in the transport section. And we did run off with the trophy. So he obviously had a good eye. And by this time, I'd been made Lance Corporal. So I'd gone from driving then to what we duties to regulate the transport and this type of thing, where we received the calls from people in the unit who required transport, and we would then allocate the drivers to do the particular jobs. And I well remember we had 2 of us were promoted. It was an acting, unpaid Lance Corporal in those days. But 2 of us had been promoted, and he was on duty one evening, and he had several Marines in the office at the time, and I think he was trying to show off a little bit, because a senior naval officer, the chief mechanical officer, rang up, lieutenant commander he was, wanting transport. For some reason, he couldn't meet the demand. And before he'd put the telephone down, he said, get on your bike. But unfortunately for him, nor had the chief mechanical officer put his phone down. So he heard this. So that was the end of the poor lad's Lance Corporal. He was up before his commanding officer next morning, of course, and was relieved of his badge of office. But I believe he was just trying to show off a bit to the other Marines that were in the office with him at the time. But it was rather a silly thing to do, because in our day, a lieutenant commander was quite a senior rank. And he carried a bit of weight in the unit, and that discipline type of things. But he, he was the chief mechanical officer on the Navy side of that particular L&M unit.
Did the Germans raid Hayling Island?
Yes, there was. We think it was not on our time. We didn't have any raids from 1941, but they had quite a number of raids on the island, and they did have 2 anti-aircraft batteries there. But we rather think, from what we were told, that they used to light fires on the island to try and draw them away from Portsmouth. At the top end of the island, the one nearest to Portsmouth, was not fully inhabited in that sense. That's where the golf course was. And we rather fancy that fires were lit, but they were a number of raids on the island itself, but whether they were all to do with that particular ploy or not, I'm not sure. But we didn't have any.
What do you remember next?
Well, I was sent across to Eastleigh Barracks to do a three-week course as a PE instructor, not PT because that was full-time, but this was to take physical exercises, recreational training within the unit. So I had a three-week spell back in Eastleigh Barracks with that, then back to the unit again. And then there was a little bit of a 42 that we were going, certain numbers of us were going to move overseas. So we then started to get the vehicles ready, painting and badges and signs and this type of thing. And then I was promoted to corporal at that time. But that fell through, so we then moved to Alton to join up with the other half of the transport company. And we went to a little place called Bentworth that just outside Alton itself. And then we operated there in the similar format that we had on the island. And then I was transferred then to the 3rd Heavy ACAC Battery, to E Battery in the 3rd Heavy, and met up then with my first sergeant, Jimmy Twigger, who'd also, at some time or other, had been moved to there, and I met him whilst I was in there, which was rather pleasant to meet him again. And we stayed with Heavy ACAC for a while, and then we really then started to get ready for overseas duty. And the entire regiment moved down, anti-aircraft regiment, moved down to Leon C, and that was where they trained before they did go overseas. Now, we don't talk about dad keeping mum, but when you went into the local service canteen there, behind the counter was loads of postcards from BPO all over the world, so that everybody knew when you went to Leon C, it wasn't long before you was on your way overseas. So there was no, in those sort of ways, the keep mum was really useless, because these areas were used regularly for that type of thing, for final training. And eventually the whole regiment of the Heavy ACAC and Light ACAC did a convoy trip right round that part of Essex. And again, everyone in that area, when you turned up there, knew what you were. They all came out with their cups of tea, and they knew then that you was on that particular last run.
Was this Lee in Hampshire or Lee in Essex?
This is Essex, Leon C.
Leon C.
Yeah, Leon C at Essex, yeah. By, you know, Southend, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, Southend. Yes, and that seemed to be, from, let's say, from looking in the canteen, there'd been a large number of regiments, mainly army regiments. I think we were the first Royal Marine one, but there'd been a large number of army regiments had gone through that routine, and they'd then been posted mainly to the Middle East at that time, but they had been posted. But I didn't stay again with them. I was then posted back to the transport section. We now had changed. We were now a supply unit. That was to provide petrol, oil, food and other supplies to the unit. So we still were transport, but we also had units that were able to supply that type of thing. And they were at Loughborough. So I joined them, and we had the same routine. We were getting ready there for the overseas posting.
So this 3rd Heavy ACAC Battery was part of the Royal Marines?
Yes, they were in the MMBDO. They were the defence, part of the defence of the MMBDO for the port that we eventually were supposed to take over and defend. So we had ACAC, and we also had coastal artillery weapons as well, the 3 and 4 inch. So it was a complete unit in that respect, that we could do the full job if required.
So you were trained to man this battery?
Well, not. I was still driver. And we did there have a lot of American vehicles, which we hadn't met before. We used to usually use the big heavy vehicles were AC Matadors hours. If we wanted to tow the heavy stuff, we would do it with the Matador, which was equipped especially for it, and it had seats in the back for the crew of the gun. Just a few, two rows of seats, not individual seats, but two rows of seats. And that was a diesel vehicle made at Southall, I think, in London, but very, very good. It was a real, real beauty. And but when we went to this other one, we found that we were driving American vehicles with the